looking for telltale signs, such as missing time or dreams of UFOs. In a random sampling of Americans, they determined that as many as 3.7 million of us have been abducted, unknowingly exclamation mark by aliens. And if that figure doesn't grab your attention, how about this one? By my own estimate, nearly 80 million Americans have either boarded a flying saucer, been in direct contact with someone who has, or read about such a person in a supermarket tabloid. That's one in every three Americans. And you're still insisting it doesn't concern you? Yes, I am, you reply. It's not going to happen to me. I'm not the type. You're not, huh? In a study conducted during the early 70s, researchers examined data relating to contactees. They found as follows: there are thousands of people throughout the world who attest to having communication with extraterrestrials. What type of person would you expect to see contacting space beings? According to our files at other dimensions and the contact we have had with contactees, there is no set pattern. Some contactees are young, some old, some are tall, some short, and they come from all ethnic and religious backgrounds. Thus, no type of individual has been found to predominate among contactees. And among abductees? Are any of us more likely than others to be taken aboard a saucer against our will? A study has shown that abductees tend to be in their 20s or 30s, show a slight preponderance of outdoor types, and are more often male than female. Yet these are merely general trends. After studying hundreds of cases, Coral Lorenzen of the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization warns simply that every human on this planet is a potential kidnap victim. In other words, a flying saucer experience can happen to anyone. Including you. Are you ready for it? Glenn McQueen and David Graham, The New UFO Sightings, Warner Paperback Library, 1974. Being prepared. The key to success in any endeavor is preparedness. Going for a hike. You take care to be physically fit, and to bring along any equipment that may be needed. Traveling to a foreign land? You study the language, and get inoculated against local diseases. Such measures can make the difference between a rewarding time and a disaster. The same is true of ride in a flying saucer. Your encounter can be deeply satisfying, or woeful from start to finish. The key lies in being prepared. Now there are two kinds of preparation, psychological and practical. Both are needed to ensure a gratifying experience. Psychological preparation involves your attitude, which has got to be positive. As the encounter starts to unfold, stand tall. Have a glint in your eye. Look forward to what is about to happen. Contactees should tell themselves that a unique experience is in the offing, one that will expand their consciousness, broaden their horizons, and leave them with an incredible story to tell. Abductees should remind themselves that they are about to receive a complete diagnostic examination, performed with advanced technology, and that they'll soon be back in their bed or car. The idea is to relax and let it happen. Seek to view the encounter, bizarre as it may be, as a welcome break in your routine. A learning experience. An opportunity for growth. So a positive attitude is important. Yet it's not enough. One must be prepared, too, in a practical sense. And for really, you will be. There is no known case of an abductee who was not returned. It is true that a permanent abduction might go unrecognized as such, the victim merely deemed a missing person. But the space aliens will return you. All they want is to complete another medical exam, send in the paperwork, and get reimbursed. The last thing they need on their hands, on the way back to their home planet, is you. That there's an excellent model, the Boy Scout. The Scout's motto says it all. To that end he acquires various skills. But he also assembles a kit. In it go such items as compass, string, bandages, matches, map, anything for which a need might arise during his sojourn in the wild. With this kit tucked away in his backpack, the Scout is prepared. And you should be too. How? By putting together what I call an encounter kit. An encounter kit is a bag full of items that could prove useful, even vital, during your stay on a UFO. The kit is assembled in advance, then kept where it will be most accessible, by your bed, near the front door, under the car seat. A smart idea is to assemble several encounter kits, and keep them at different locations. Any sort of bag will do, gym bag, tote bag, plastic shopping bag. Here's what I suggest it contain. Get one of those space pens developed for it'll write in reduced gravity, a vacuum, and other extreme situations. The sources tend to be over-air conditioned. Be sure to ask your hosts if photographs are okay, abductees are rarely given anything to eat or drink. Theodore Flora, A Noise from India to the Planet Mars, University Books, 1960, transcribes a number of Martian words and gives their English equivalent. For communicating with the party horn-nosed aliens, dash, see page 146, you may be kept waiting for your medical exam, you'll want to refer back to it. Put together this kit and keep it handy at all times, ready to be grabbed at a moment's notice. You should also consider installing a UFO detector in your home or automobile. Upon sensing the type of electromagnetism associated with sources, these devices sound an alarm. Without one, you could get taken by surprise, not the best way to begin an encounter. Detectors are advertised. If you assemble multiple encounter kits, be sure to place a copy of my book in each of them. Hang the expense. It could prove to be the single most useful item in your kit. In UFO magazines. Actually, there is one other type of preparedness that could prove useful, and that's psychic. If you're eager for an encounter, get in touch with your intuitive faculties. Contactees have reported an overpowering urge to drive to a particular site. They do so, and find a saucer awaiting them. Be alert to such feelings. They're surprisingly reliable. Speaking of alertness, an extra measure of it may be called for under certain circumstances. Ufologists have determined the following. 1. The highest rates of both sightings and contacts are found in Ohio, New Mexico, and the metropolitan Los Angeles area. 2. The peak months for sightings and contacts are September and October. 3. The peak day is Wednesday, 0.7% of all reports. Or you can build your own. Basically, they are magnetometers capable of detecting any changes in the magnetic fields between 1 Hz and 10 Hz. Below is a typical concoction. 4. The peak hours are 8 to 11 in the evening. 5. The likeliest sites are isolated locations, in particular, lonely roads. 38% of contacts are of the lonely road type. So if you're driving on a lonely road in Ohio, and it's a Wednesday night in October, keep an eye out for extraterrestrials. One final word on preparedness. Entire communities have taken steps to prepare for, or to attract, a flying saucer. The town of Lake City, Pennsylvania, built a landing site, and held a UFO festival. And a city councilor in Nashville has been trying to get a landing site built there. To lure back elves. But the bottom line is this, flying saucers don't need a landing site. They can set down anywhere. And take aboard anyone, you, me, that Boy Scout, who happens to suit their fancy. So be prepared. Coming aboard boarding a UFO can be a daunting experience. A prospective contactee is not sure what to expect from the strange craft, which he has approached with as much hesitation as anticipation, looming before him. Nothing in his prior experience has prepared him for this moment. His mouth is dry, his heart beats rapidly. He considers taking off in the opposite direction. Such feelings are understandable. Yet they can and should be avoided. Let's take a look at the boarding process, and try to dispel some of the mystery and anxiety that surround it. Flying saucers are boarded in one of two ways. If the ship is sitting on the ground with its door open, you can walk right up to it. Howard V. Chambers, author of UFOs for the Millions, Sherborne Press, 1967, advises contactees to approach a landed saucer with optimistic caution. Maintain your poise, he says, by thinking friendly and curious thoughts, thoughts that may be monitored by those inside. And Chambers offers this empathetic observation, remember that the contact may be just as exciting for your visitors as it is for you. When you reach the ramp, simply climb it, hop inside, and look about for a crew member. But increasingly, contactees are being tractor beamed aboard. A hovering UFO emits a ray, which strikes you, renders you immobile, and draws you inside. The experience can be disconcerting. But try to relax and enjoy it. Think of it as an amusement park ride. The following is a description of being tractor beamed aboard. It is from 7 Hours Aboard a Spaceship by Dan Martin, self-published, 1959. Two men from Mercury had appeared at Martin's door and announced, "We have come to take you on a journey in a spaceship. It will be interesting and helpful." Leading Martin into an invisible beam, they positioned themselves on either side of him. "As soon as they took hold of my two arms, we went up. No time was lost. The sensation was just like going up in a fast elevator. It might scare you a little, or make you feel as if you were being turned wrong side out. This was the sensation I had. I looked down and could see the waters of the Rio Grande River flowing between the two cities. I knew that we were traveling fast, as the lights were rapidly becoming dimmer. I did not have any particular sensation of traveling at this time, only at the start. It was a matter of minutes until we were out of sight of the lights of the cities and the river. I began to feel very cold and I knew we were quite high. The three were soon entering the ship, via a tube equipped with spiral shutters. Being tractor beamed is perfectly safe. Associated with the procedure, though, are some minor ills: headache, nervous stomach, fatigue. Be sure your encounter kit is equipped with the appropriate pills. Once aboard, you may be taken aback by the exotic technology that will surround you. So here's an idea of what to expect. This description of a saucer's interior is taken from Reinhold Schmidt's Edge of Tomorrow, the Reinhold O. Schmidt story, self-published, 1963. Besides the leader, there were three men and two women in the ship. The women were sitting behind a big desk on which there was a large frame which enclosed what looked like a viewing screen. At the same end of the ship were four columns of colored liquid: red, green, blue, and orange. These tubes were approximately 4.5 feet high and 6 inches in diameter. The ladies seemed to be watching the liquid very closely as it moved slowly up and down, like the pistons in an automobile. The three men were working on an instrument panel that filled one side of the room. I saw one of them clip off some short wires. The panel was filled with clocks, dials, buttons and switches. In the center was a large screen which looked like our television screens, but it was not working while I was there. The walls of the ship were about a foot thick and looked glassy. Oddly enough, I could see through them. The sky, the surrounding scenery, even the weeds and brush beneath us were visible. But, I remembered, looking at the ship from the outside, it seemed to be made of a solid piece of metal. There were no portholes or windows. The only opening was the doorway. While you're gaping at all this, the ship may take off. Grab onto something. You don't want to go flying into those tubes of colored liquid, and get billed for breakage. Or worse yet, go flying out the doorway. The main thing to remember is that a unique experience is about to come your way. If the space people are your hosts, that experience can be positive and empowering. Something more ambivalent may be expected from the space aliens. So try to relax as you come aboard. Get ready to deal with, and to of, your encounter. I am often asked, "Professor Solomon, just where do you stand on flying saucers?" And I reply, "Away from the door." Making the most a ride in a UFO is a once-in-a-lifetime event. For some, it is an unnerving event, a misfortune to be endured, then mercifully forgotten. For others, it is the opportunity of a lifetime. Your experience can be good, bad, or indifferent, depending on your attitude. You can decide from the start that this is the worst thing that has ever happened to you and it probably will be. Or you can decide that good fortune has sought you out. The choice is yours. Look, you're aboard a flying saucer. So why not calm down and accept that? And once you've done so, go a step further. Resolve to make the most of the situation, to derive every possible benefit from it. "Fine," you may be saying in a doubtful tone of voice, But just how do I go about doing that? It's a question I hear all the time. And the answer is, check out the following suggestions, my 37 for making the most of a flying saucer experience. I have assembled them into two sets. The first consists of things to do while an encounter is still unfolding, that is, while you're still aboard the ship. The second is for when you're back on Earth. Read through these suggestions. Mark those that seem appropriate to your own needs, temperament, or lifestyle. Then, when your encounter begins, you'll be ready. Ready to with it. Okay, here are my suggestions. To begin with, things to do while still aboard, to establish an initial rapport with your hosts, or captors, make an effort to learn the rudiments of their language. In the case of the space people, that won't be easy. Their language is a complex arrangement of multisyllabic, one. Abstractions, a single word can take up to half an hour to pronounce, formulaic cliches, every sentence must include one, and meditative murmurs. But your efforts to speak it, however clumsy, will demonstrate a general willingness to learn. You'll have an easier time with those aliens that have party horns for noses. Just get out your horn and exchange some honks with them. They'll love it. As for the space aliens, try cackling, humming, or gesturing at them. No communication may result, but it could dawn on them that you're an intelligent, articulate creature like themselves, someone worthy of decent treatment. Question the space people about their home planet. What's its name? In what constellation does it lie? Does it have different nationalities? What are its television shows like? Once reminded that Clarion Northantex or Bibulos is exotic and interesting to you, they'll be more than happy to talk about it. And maybe even to take you there. 2. 3. That circular corridor along the perimeter of most saucers. It's perfect for jogging. So how about a few laps? They'll help to counter the effects of artificial gravity on your musculoskeletal system. And for abductees, there's no better way to dissolve stress. If you're confined to a capsule, try jogging in place. Pretend you're waiting for a traffic light to change. The space people will probably give you a tour of the ship. While being led about, note the location of any recreational or snack facilities. You'll want to make full use of these during your stay. And observe closely the propulsion system and other advanced technology, for the benefit of the scientists who, upon your return to Earth, will be lining up to question you. The space people can help you develop your psychic powers. If you're serious about it, and willing to make, 4. 5. The effort, you can learn ESP, clairvoyance, or spoon bending. Just let them know you're interested. Aboard, and wear it about the ship. You'll feel less like an outsider. Be adventuresome when it comes to the space people's cuisine. Based on a type of bin curd, it takes getting used to. But at least sample everything on the table. Highly recommended is the nectar, which is drunk throughout Tori Geller, the noted spoon bender, tells, in my story, Prager Publishers, 1975, of having acquired his powers from extraterrestrial entities. The jumpsuit will be useful, too, back on Earth, so hang on to it. You can wear it to parties, as a conversation piece. And it will enhance your stage appearance, should you go on tour as a spoon bender. 6. Ask for a jumpsuit. There's usually a spare one. 7. The meal, and is helpful in achieving the extraterrestrial glide, see number 8. Some of the more advanced space people avoid food entirely, they consume only pills. Should you find yourself on one of their ships, be sure to observe the proper etiquette. Each pill, starting with the smallest, is levitated into the air, then given a gentle tap into the mouth. It's a chance to show off your newly acquired psychic powers. The most advanced space people avoid even pills. According to Thomas Lake Harris, a 19th century spiritualist, the inhabitants of Cassiopeia feed chiefly upon the aromas of exquisite flowers. Learn to do the extraterrestrial glide, a form of levitation that's both stylish and practical. I have come across several references to the glide. In The Winged Life of Cosmos, Testimony of Sister Hope, Chatfout Press, 1974, hope Droxel offers a tantalizing glimpse. Droxel was walking along a path, when she encountered a well-dressed, smiling extraterrestrial. My eyes kept being drawn to his feet, for I could not quite tell, but he didn't seem to be touching the ground, yet every time I tried to watch exactly, his eyes called mine back to his face. Yet it was also strange that there was no sound of his footsteps. Was he, or was he not, walking on the path? As he came closer, there seemed to be several inches of space between his feet and the ground. 8. Reinhold Schmidt, a fertilizer salesman who was taken by saucer from Nebraska to the North Pole, notes, "Another thing that fascinated me was the way the crewmen glided, instead of walking, across the floor when they stepped back from the instrument panels. It seemed as though they were on a moving sidewalk, although I saw no moving parts. And when I tried it, it didn't work. I wondered if they had something special on their shoes." Howard Menger witnessed the glide. A tall, handsome man with long blonde hair over his shoulder stood towering at the entrance. He looked directly at me as he stepped out of the ship. He proceeded toward me, but he seemed to float or glide, rather than walk. His body appeared to be weightless. And in New Mexico, Air Force Sergeant Charles Moody was abducted from his car one morning in 1975. He reports, "It's going to sound ridiculous and I hope nobody sends me a straitjacket, but these beings did not walk, they glided. Ask the space people to show you how to do the glide. It's useful for sneaking about, avoiding your boss, coming home late, getting a midnight snack, or for just looking cool. The trick, apparently, is one of mind over matter. Just keep telling yourself, 'I can do it, I can do it.'" Most saucers have a lounge with comfortable chairs and a viewing window. Be sure to spend some time in this room, sipping nectar and gazing out the window. It will be a memorable experience. You'll see more stars than you can imagine, all bright and unflickering. And in the midst of them, this cloud-clad earth of ours. A glorious sight. Sit there and meditate on the nature of the universe. On man's place in it. On the meaning of things. Pour yourself another nectar, and allow the sheer wonder of the cosmos to engulf you. In The Secret of the Sources, Orfeo Angelosi describes his feelings as he gazed out a viewing window and contemplated the blaze of stars, always brooding silence, order, and indescribable beauty. A deep feeling of reverence possessed me. I had never been an actively religious man, but in that moment I knew God as a tangible, immutable force that reaches to the furthest depths of time and eternity. 9. And the lines of Edward Young in Night Thoughts come to mind. Devotion. Daughter of astronomy. An indevout astronomer is mad. Keep a space diary, a detailed record of everything that happens to you aboard the saucer. Use that notebook and pen in your encounter kit. Should you decide to write a book or give lectures, such a record will prove invaluable. It will be useful, too, in case of a lawsuit. Let's say you wind up having to sue the space people for mental distress suffered during an accident. If you testify, "I vaguely recall being dematerialized during the afternoon of my first, no, my second day, on the craft," the jury may have its doubts. But show them a scrawled Tuesday 2:30, "Got dematerialized while being shown the propulsion system," phew. 10. And you've got yourself a dozen believers. Acquire a college education. How? It's easy. The space people have this machine, a box with a hole in it, into which you stick your head. 90 seconds late to you. 11. Remove your head. And are educated. It's as simple as that. There's even a choice of curriculum, traditional, multicultural, or pop. Don't miss out on this opportunity. It's free, fast, and painless. You'll return to Earth with improved prospects for a job. The machine leaves a faint mark on your ear that serves as a diploma. Just lean forward and show the mark to prospective employers. Some flying saucers are capable of time travel. Should you find yourself aboard such a craft, take advantage of that capability. How? By going back in time. And becoming your own grandfather. Why would anyone want to become his own grandfather? Because it can lower your income tax, due to a quirk in the laws defining a dependent. And small businessmen can benefit from being their own grandfather. It exempts them from certain federal regulations, thanks to a grandfather clause attached to the original legislation. Get rejuvenated. The space people have an elixir that will restore your youth. Remember Mondra Ulika, 417 years old and still youthful in body and mind? There's a side effect associated with the elixir, spontaneous levitation. See things to beware for more on this phenomenon, but the newly youthful soon get the hang of keeping their feet on the ground. 12. 13. You. They are an ancient and savvy civilization. So sit back, sip on your nectar, and listen to them expatiate. Get a sense of how they approach the fundamental questions. Seek to comprehend their vision of life, to view the universe through their twinkling eyes. The goal is not to cram your mind with more information, but to expand your cosmic consciousness. How will you, 14, get the space people to share their wisdom with, know when you've done so? A strange tingle will spread over your body. The chair will seem to have come alive. And you'll become convinced that you and the chair, indeed, you and the universe, are one. The space people may offer you a trip to Mars. Take them up on it. Mars is a fascinating place, and a flying saucer, the perfect means for sightseeing. Be sure to visit the happy face, see photo on page 159. Carved by the Martians as a symbol of their utopian ideals, it's the largest monument in the solar system. If the rigors mind and matter are a continuum, so as your consciousness expands, your body may do likewise, and become stuck in the chair. Just shimmy about until disengaged. 15. If your encounter are starting to get to you, a big smile could be just what's needed. Mars, of course, is covered with canals. They serve to transport water from the polar ice caps, which melt periodically, to millions of backyard swimming pools. A pool is a constitutionally guaranteed amenity of every Martian. You'll want to visit a canal and ride in a gondola. Jorgen, Delira will serenade you, beneath a romantic pair of moons, to some space music. This stuff is different, but oddly satisfying once you get used to it. What is space music like? Orfeo Angelici describes it in The Secret of the Sources, but as my ears caught a startling, unfamiliar strain, I listened intently to music such as I had never heard or could imagine. It is beyond description, for it was not music as we know it, nor was it played to our musical scale. It was strange, haunting drifts of melody that brought visions of star galaxies and planets spinning in notes of perfect harmony. 16. Go to the lounge. Activate the jukebox, and listen, and George Adamski, who heard space music while aboard the mothership, describes it as like no music I had ever before heard. Should you acquire a taste for it, space music is available on Earth, on recordings by terrestrial musicians who have tuned into the celestial vibes. Playing such instruments as Mars is not on the money system, everything is free, so you won't have to pay the gondolier. But he will appreciate a dollar bill, for its picture of George Washington. Martians like to fold George into a mushroom. The harmony harp, with its 100-note octave, and the cosmic beam. These artists have given expression to a Gallimaufryov, to quote a blurb for one of their recordings, deep drones, galactic winds, thunderous rumblings, harmonic choirs, and elegant electronic motifs. Check the New Age section of your music store. And be prepared for something different. Space music is great for meditation or stress reduction. But an even more exhilarating musical experience is available aboard the saucer. For you'll be in a position to listen to the real thing, those harmonies of which space music is a pale reflection. I am referring to the music of the spheres. What is the music of the spheres? Does it even exist? Modern-day astronomers scoff at the idea. But for thousands of years, the planets and stars were thought to be attached to invisible spheres. Propelled by angels, these spheres revolve. And their motion produces heavenly harmonies, an ethereal music. Due to our mortal nature, however, we cannot normally hear these sounds. But aboard a saucer, You'll be able to hear the music of our deafness to the music of the spheres is described by Shakespeare. There's not the smallest orb which thou behold'st, but in his motion like an angel sings. Such harmony is in immortal souls, but whilst this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in, we cannot hear it.